Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Farrell-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and today we're going to be talking about pay transparency. We're talking with Adam Hamill. He's the Director and Chair of Employment Practice Group for McLean Middleton. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Thanks a lot, Dave. Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you. You know, boy, pay transparency. Wouldn't it be great if we could see everything everywhere? I mean, let's just ask. That's just a general question. Transparency tells me I can see everything anywhere, but we know that's not really the case. Why is it such a big, hot topic today? Why is this issue of pay and being able to understand what somebody makes, why is it so big today?
Well, so this is an interesting thing. I mean, in terms of, you know, there's a lot of, you know, benefits to it potentially for employers and employees. And I think that, you know, just in the world we're living in today with social media and, you know, and constant, news that, you know, there's a whole sense of transparency in a whole bunch of aspects, and, you know, and people sort of expect that. And so I think that it is, you know, spilling over into the employment arena, and particularly, we could talk about this more later, but, you know, in the area of, gender pay equity has become a real big issue. And I think that, you know, pay transparency is something that fits into that as a big component. So I think that's really sort of why, you know, we're hearing more and more about this concept of pay transparency in the workplace.
It has a big effect on what companies think, and it has a big effect on what owners are dealing with. And I think this is probably where I'll start today, is about this conversation of a company deciding to do this. You and I have talked about in the past this decision to make of whether to be transparent or not with what people make and to what extent, right? So I know you have a story about a company that's really taking it all the way. So why don't you share a little bit about that, and then we can walk that back and talk about what that might mean.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, you know, really on the very, very far extreme of this pay transparency spectrum is a company called Buffer. And what they are is they are an internet marketing company, and they've really taken the concept of pay transparency to its extreme. What they do, if you were to go to their website, buffer.com right now, you would be able to find a spreadsheet that lists all of their employees by name and gives you a listing of what the salary for each of those employees are. So they've, you know, laid all their cards on the table, not just for their employees, but for the public to see, you know, what it is that their pay practices are. So that's sort of the real extreme. And I, you know, we don't see that, you know, a lot of employers going in that regard. And I don't know that it's necessarily a good idea, but they are really sort of the poster children for, you know, sort of the maximum pay transparency.
So you have organizations being in some way pressured by social media or another and other platforms to disclose information. So let me ask a legal question. Do they have to? Are they required by law to provide this information, or is it more what we'll call social pressure out there today? And then what is required, if I should ask, from a standpoint of let's stay with the company for right now.
Yeah. So in terms of, you know, for companies, in terms of, you know, what is actually required in the United States, it's very little. I mean, there is the EEO-1 reporting that employers need to do, where there is some, you know, level of, you know, anonymous, you know, reporting. But in terms of that, you know, employers do not have, you know, in the United States and, you know, in Massachusetts and New Hampshire, do not have an obligation to disclose information about, you know, pay practices. And there could even be some concerns, you know, in terms of the employee privacy point of view about, you know, disclosing individual employees, salary information without their consent. Other countries, however, have taken a different view of this. And a couple of years ago, there was some, you know, big news reporting in Great Britain where there was some disclosure and reporting that was required from companies. And there were some, you know, pretty embarrassing results for a lot of big companies in Great Britain when that reporting resulted in, you know, it being known that there was a lot of gender pay equity disparities for these companies. So, you know, as it stands right now, you know, employers, you know, don't have a requirement to be, you know, transparent. It's really more of a employment practices issue, an idea about, retention and recruitment of people. And also, there's other benefits about, using it as a tool to promote gender pay equity.
Yeah, we'll certainly get into the benefits and risks. I want to do that as the show progresses. Let's start really, as we said at the beginning, what are the options for an organization, right? From the extreme, you just talked about, let's put everything out there, to the, I will not talk, thou shall not speak of such things on the other side of the spectrum.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's starting just really at the very most basic, point that, what transparency is. It's a practice of disclosing, within the company or publicly, some level of information about pay practices. And, and where that falls is can be along a spectrum of, at one end of sort of the least amount of transparency, being completely opaque, is no transparency at all. Pay practices are completely a mystery to employees and not talked about. I mean, and this is very similar to kind of the old days, where people didn't talk about, their pay at all, either from a sense of, that's just something it's not spoken of. It's not, something you talk about in polite, conversation, to really even sort of more prescribed by employers having policies prohibiting employees from discussing their pay. Of course, that is, something that, is problematic and, potentially illegal under the National Labor Relations Act in terms of, preventing people from engaging in concerted activity. In Massachusetts, under the recent, equal pay law in Massachusetts, it is illegal for employers to prohibit employees from talking to each other about pay. But, there still is nothing stopping an employer from, completely, sort of guarding how it is that they determine what, salaries are and not sharing that information. So that's, the end of the spectrum on, having very little transparency. Some people have some more transparency, sort of they could describe the criteria or the processes by which, management, sets salaries or determines pay raises. Maybe even more transparency than that some companies do is that they can disclose, within their workplace, they can tell people what the ranges are for different categories of jobs so people know where they fit on a range. And then, beyond that is sort of the really, other extreme of, complete transparency where, everything is laid out on the table. And that's really sort of the spectrum that we see, among employers. And you usually see, people who are mostly around the middle of that sort of some transparency, talking about, what are the criteria that we use to set salaries and determine pay raises.
And we're talking with Adam Hamill. He is the director and chair of the Employment Practice Group at McLean Middleton. And again, we're talking about pay transparency. I'm your host, David Chulo, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour Educational HR Radio. So we've talked a little bit about what pay transparency is, but I do want to ask one other specific question about that before we get into the benefits of doing such a thing. And that is, there's this conversation of being transparent with the actual pay of people, right? The, Bob makes 50,000, Sue makes 50,000, right? To have equity in that statement. But there's also this question about ranges and actual compensation information of what bonus structures or maybe phantom stock or all these things. Are you seeing organizations even opening up the doors to that, even on that extreme situation where salary is provided, are what we'll call benefits or fringe benefits or executive benefits being part of that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that as we see pay equity laws developing and this discussion, looking, I think that people are be wise to look beyond just base salary and really looking at compensation because, for instance, the Massachusetts pay equity law does take into account, sort of essentially total compensation, not just looking at base salary. And obviously, when employees are considering, where they're going to work, they take all of that into account. So I think that that's exactly right. That employers, are looking at that and talking about that in terms of, what the sort of the total compensation package is, and being, to some degree, somewhat transparent about those things.
The follow-up question to that is, so you're an employer and you employ people in Maine, Massachusetts, California, Texas, you have plants maybe in Alabama, you have a all over the country and maybe out of country, but let's stay with the US right now. When there are laws that talk about pay transparency in one state and the organization may or may not be headquartered there, don't know the answer to that. How do they flow into the other states, and how do you advise clients that have that issue to how to deal with that situation?
That's always a challenging issue, and not just an issue of pay, but in a whole bunch of a whole host of issues of employment when you have multi-state workforces in sort of navigating that. And there's a couple of different ways to approach it. And one of those is to identify which state has sort of the most employee-friendly laws, and perhaps gear your policies, toward that, or what employers do, and this requires more work and more care, is to look at the laws in each state and provide a different set of policies for each workforce, and there could be good reasons to do that, and probably are good reasons to do that, especially in the area of pay, because you really get into issues of cost of living. And so if you have, for instance, people working in a high cost urban area, or like San Francisco, whereas people are working in rural areas where the cost of living is going to be completely different, obviously it makes a lot of sense for the employer to have very different pay practices. But that's another important piece about the transparency, understanding that the geographic location of the worker is a component that goes into compensation, and being transparent about that can be helpful to the employer.
Well, I think that's part of the discussion, right? Because any bit of information out of context or out of understanding about, if somebody's making 150,000 in San Francisco, that's probably like making 50,000 in Concord, New Hampshire, right? I mean, it's just a huge difference, or New York City, or Chicago, or any of those different things. And maybe I'm being a little more extreme on that than it probably is, but to illustrate the point is that, but you don't think about that as the individual in that seat. I do the same job. Why am I not getting paid that amount of money? And that's where the equity challenge sometimes comes.
Exactly. And that's one of the things too. I mean, I start from the proposition that, employers want to treat their employees fairly. I mean, it's, obviously, it's not only is it the right thing to do, but it's good business. And so, in some ways, as long as you're doing that and you've got policies and practices that are designed to treat your employees fairly, transparency in some ways, is really a benefit to you, because when you're treating your employees fairly and making decisions in an equitable way, being transparent about that, can provide that information and make employees aware of the reasons why there may be some disparity among, different classifications of workers or people working in different areas. And then when they understand, what it is that goes into the employer's pay practices, that sort of guesswork, or jumping to conclusions about unfairness, that can go away.
How often do you recommend that organizations take a look at their pay scales and revamp them from a compensation standpoint? As you know, we do compensation, and a lot of times we do it through attorneys for obvious reasons. But I've seen anything from yearly to 3 years to 5 years. And the reason I ask is I think because of today's social pressures that have probably not been there in the way that they have in the past. What's the recommendation today for organizations to take a look at that? No, not only at executive comp, but throughout the whole organization.
Yeah, so I think that the answer to that question is a couple of things. Number one is if you haven't done it, now is the time to do it. But if it is something that that employers should probably do on a regular basis and on a schedule that makes sense for them. I mean, maybe, you know, if it's a smaller company, or if depending upon the sort of the level of intensity with which they do the analysis, maybe doing it on a yearly basis is sort of unnecessary. Perhaps one sort of helpful sort of guideline for that might be 3 years. Just as an example, the Massachusetts pay equity law includes a safe harbor provision, for employers who conduct a an analysis of their pay practices and set in place an action plan to address those issues. And if that's done within 3 years of a claim being filed, provide some defense for them. So perhaps 3 years is maybe the target that might make sense for employers to conduct that sort of analysis of what their pay practices are.
Okay, great. The other part I would add to that is some organizations decide to sometimes do that through attorney-client privilege. And is that something that is recommended, or is that something that doesn't necessarily always fit into that category?
Yeah, I mean, I think that certainly, it's, especially if you have concerns about what you might find through that analysis, there is the opportunity to, at least initially, have that work be protected by the attorney-client privilege. But, even if you, you go through the analysis and you discover that there are some significant pay equity issues, even if you do it through the context of, having that analysis done through your attorney, you obviously want to address them and deal with them. So
Oh, absolutely.
we do see some employers choosing to work through their employment counsel to do that for that reason.
Yeah, no, we understand. And we, as I said, work with a lot of attorneys through for that very reason as part of that. Again, we're talking with Adam Hamill. He is the director and chair of the Employment Practice Group at McLean Middleton. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. A news talk, WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back. In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Let me ask you a question. How do you feel about genetically modified ingredients?
Don't like them.
Artificial flavors and colors?
No thanks.
Clean ingredients.
Now that I like.
When you care about what's in things and what's not, shouldn't your vitamins be clean too? Sundown Vitamins are all clean all the time. Non-GMO, free of gluten and dairy, with colors and flavors from real food. We even have USDA certified Sundown Organics and kids vitamins too. When you're living clean, choose clean with Sundown Vitamins at supermarkets, drugstores, or on Amazon.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
Spring is in full swing, and there's no better time to freshen up your home than right now. Blinds.com is giving you up to 35% off everything site-wide as a warm welcome to a new season. Blinds.com makes it so convenient to order online with free shipping and a guaranteed perfect fit for your windows. Whether you DIY or have them handle the install from start to finish, you really can't get it wrong. Next time you open your windows to let in that warm spring breeze, you'll love the views when you have brand new custom window treatments to enjoy. Whether you're looking for high-performance solar and roller shades, the classic silhouette of a Roman shade, or want to enhance your home with the warm textures of bamboo shades, Blinds.com will help you get a stunning new look this season. Visit Blinds.com right now to shop their new deals perfect for your spring home refresh with up to 35% off everything from blinds, shades, interior shutters, and even outdoor shades. Rules and restrictions may apply.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour. presented by CMAKorea.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo. And remember, the HR Power Hour is podcasted every week on your favorite podcast channel, whether it is iTunes or Spotify or any of the ones that are out there. Please go to HR Power Hour and look it up. And we appreciate you joining us. We're talking with Adam Hamill. He's the director and chair of employment practice at McLean Middleton. And we're talking today about pay transparency. You know, Adam, in the first segment, we talked a lot about what it is and some of the different levels that people have in regards to where they want to have that pay transparency. But I think they need some information to decide whether or not it makes sense for them. And I guess the only other thing I want to add before we get into the benefits is there a difference between private companies and public entities and maybe even nonprofit? So I kind of want to lump those three for a second, and then we'll get into the benefits.
You know, I don't think that there is, you know, a big difference in terms of how this works for different kinds of companies. I mean, it just may be in terms of, you know, the decision process and who the decision makers are about, you know, what they want to do and how they want to implement this, if they want to implement this, and whether or not it makes sense in terms of the pressures that they're seeing. You know, perhaps in the nonprofit space, you know, a lot of those, you know, are people or entities that have sort of a social mission, and maybe it's more important to those kind of organizations to engage in this, whereas, you know, other sort of more kind of hierarchical businesses or, you know, with a profit motive might have a different sense about this. But in terms of how it's analyzed and how it's approached, I don't really see a big difference in those different categories of companies.
Hey, great. So let's talk about the benefits for a minute here, if we can. Obviously, first one that comes to mind, closing the gender pay gap. You mentioned it in the first section, certainly a big conversation. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I mean, this obviously is an issue that, you know, it's been a big, you know, it's been discussed, you know, for decades, but I think that we've gotten a lot of, you know, more attention to this, you know, in the last several years. I mean, you know, some high profile instances, you know, out of Hollywood and out of, you know, in, you know, women's sports, you know, with the women's soccer team and things like that. So I think that there has been, you know, a lot of attention paid to this, and rightly so. I mean, you know, the statistics show that, you know, nationally, women make about 78% as much as men. In, you know, Massachusetts, where I'm based, you know, the figures are a little bit better. Women make about 84% as much as men, but, you know, that still is a significant pay gap. And so it's an issue that that people are focused on, and I think rightly so. The issue of pay transparency is something that, you know, can be a tool to help employers identify and address some gender pay equity within their organization.
So if an employer says, okay, I'm going to evaluate it, I'm going to look at it, I'm going to make a determination on to look at this pay gap, do they do it themselves?
They absolutely could. And depending upon the size of their workforce and sort of the complexity of it, you know, it is something that, you know, your CFO could do. And as a matter of fact, you know, the Massachusetts Attorney General's office, you know, has some worksheets and tools that smaller employers could do. But, you know, if you have, you know, a larger workforce, you have some complexity to your compensation structures, you know, you're probably much better off, you know, working either with an attorney or with a compensation consultant to really kind of help you dig in and make sure that you're looking at that correctly. And you want to do that analysis and sort of get those pay practices in order before you sort of, you know, open the doors and then put your pay practices out on display for your workforce or for the larger world.
Yeah. And as we wrap up today, I want to talk about what that means in terms of that from that perspective. You know, one of the other benefits could be how about increasing employee motivation?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, one of these things that, you know, that if employees, you know sort of what the pay ranges are or what the factors, you know, are for how it is that they're going to progress along the salary scale within your organization, that can be a tool to motivate employees to, you know, better themselves and to work towards promotions. And this is exactly the approach that Whole Foods has taken with this. Whole Foods is someone who has, as a company, that has, you know, been deliberate about, you know, some level of pay transparency. What they do is, again, you could go to their website, and what you can see on their website is, you know, a description of the categories of workers who work within their retail stores. And for each of those categories available to the public is the pay range for those. And the leadership at Whole Foods has done that deliberately because they want, you know, for instance, you know, the frontline cashier to know that if these are the sort of the skills and responsibilities, and if I can, you know, get some experience and gain those skills, I can move up into the next category, and you know, and that's what I'm going to make. And so they see that, and some other companies see that as a tool to motivate employees to advance within the ranks.
Well, if they're motivated, then I suspect that retention is going to be better.
Absolutely. And really, again, you know, that the other thing too is that not only is there that sort of motivation and sort of the idea that, you know, I can progress in the company, but the other thing too is that, you know, on the issue of, you know, employee retention and satisfaction is that, you know, there's been a lot of research that talks about how, you know, that money is not a prime motivator for employees in, you know, staying with a company or being happy with a company. However, what the research has shown is that assumes that people believe that they're being paid fairly. And so we talked about this in the last segment, is that, one of the things that pay transparency can do is it can show the workforce that the company, you know, is handling their pay practices in a deliberate and in a fair manner. And if employees know that and understand that, that sort of takes away sort of the guesswork and the assumption that the employers, you know, are not treating them fairly. You can sort of focus on the other reasons why it's such a great place to work.
Well, you know, we're talking about hiring, and I think about Whole Foods, who puts their rates of pay right out there. And I think that's great because it really helps employees who are thinking about working there. It helps them know what's going to happen, and that must make the hiring process a little simpler for employers, you would think.
Right. So, I mean, you know, one of the things, if you have transparent pay practices, if your salary ranges for particular jobs is sort of set and out there, then, you know, in terms of it takes the that sort of, you know, subjective negotiation out of the process. It's sort of, you know, the pay is what the pay is. And so, you know, some employers who do this, they sort of say, you know, we're paying based on the position, not on the person. And so, you know, when an employee comes in or a candidate comes in and wants to negotiate a higher salary, you know, what the employer in that instance, if they're transparent about what their pay practices are, again, they can say, well, this is what the pay is for this job. If you're looking for a higher salary, let's talk about what, you know, additional job responsibilities you can have, or let's look at what your career progression is going to be in this company, and, you know, and sort of knowing what your path is going to be. So it sort of takes that element of negotiation and that sort of angst that goes along with it, takes it out of the hiring process. And so in that way, simplifies it. There's a counterbalance to that we can talk about a little bit later on. But, you know, it does certainly, like I said, sort of streamline and simplify the hiring process.
Absolutely. And again, we're talking with Adam Hamill. He's the director chair of Employment Practice Group at McLean Middleton. And we're talking about pay transparency. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, Educational HR Radio. I'm your host, David Chulo. The last thing I can think about in regards to the benefits would probably be around reputation and control of information. Because as we talked about and have multiple times talked about, the social media of today and the messaging of it, you can get in trouble for blinking pretty much today if it's taken the wrong way. So talk a little about how employers get to maybe control the information as well as protect their reputation this way.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, you know, the old fashioned kind of office gossip and the chatter around the water cooler has now, you know, transitioned to, you know, the internet, and it's available for the whole world to see, not just within, you know, your organization. So, you know, there are sites like, Glassdoor and Payscale, where, you know, employees and others, you know, can, you know, give ratings and reviews of companies on an anonymous basis. And those can have, you know, a significant effect on, you know, both your existing employees as well as people who are looking at you as a potential employer. And so, you know, one of the things that is a potential benefit to an employer who's looking at pay transparency is you know, it gives the employer the ability to sort of get out in front of things and control that flow of information. What information is being, put out there about your pay practices? Because, of course, if you kind of leave it to, you know, what sort of happens organically and gets out there in social media, there's a risk that the information is going to be incorrect or incomplete. And so, being sort of out up in front of it gives the employer a bit of, control about messaging. And that goes sort of hand in hand with the idea of, employer reputation. And this is really sort of a recruiting tool. You know, if you want to have your organization be one that's viewed as an organization that treats employees fairly, compensates fairly, being transparent to some degree about your pay practices, can help you, develop and justify that reputation.
From an attorney perspective, do you think that being transparent is a benefit, and does it lower your risk? We're going to talk about the other side of it in a few seconds, but just at a high level, do you think that it lowers the risk to an organization? Is it neutral or is it negative?
Well, I think that the key is, is sort of the baseline of what goes underneath that in terms of, what lowers your risk is, having legally compliant and fair and reasonable pay practices. And that should be the goal of all employers. And if you have that, then, you should have no qualms about, being reasonably transparent about it. And that could be a benefit to you in terms of, I really sort of view this as something that, is a potential tool for employers in terms of, culture, retention and recruitment. But in terms of, from a liability point of view, a risk management point of view, the transparency piece is, something that goes on top of it. What's really important is kind of what's under the hood in terms of your fair and reasonable and legally compliant pay practices.
Yeah, and that's where the rubber meets the road, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, so we're going to talk about the drawbacks now or the challenges that might be faced. And but before we do that, we're going to take a quick commercial break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Hi, I'm Susan McVetty.
And I'm Pete McVetty from McVetty's Hearth and Home.
Is there a sale going on at the store right now?
No.
No Hearthstone, Quadrifier, Mendota, Wittes, Blaze King, or Morso sale?
No.
No Yodel, Vermont Castings, or Regency? Oh, there's always a Regency sale.
No.
You're telling me that out of the gazillions of wood, gas, and pellet stoves that we carry, there's not a single sale going on?
Nope.
Oh, what about patio furniture, awnings, grills, smokers, and aluminum docks?
No, just because there isn't a big sale going on doesn't mean that we're not having great deals and still doing free estimates for anyone needing a heating appliance.
Oh, well, good. Just let me know when we're having another sale.
Okay, there's always a bargain to be had if you are looking for one. And we don't need a new heating appliance.
Well, maybe my sister needs one, or my friend, or your sister.
Stop by McVetty's Hearth and Home at 893 Route 1 in Yarmouth, or check out our website at stovesofmaine.com for the latest information, including our sales.
Really? I have to check out the website? Really? And I can't believe Regency isn't having a sale.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and again, you're listening to HR Educational Radio, which you can get each and every week at HRPowerHour.com or, of course, at Podcast Live on your favorite podcast channel. Just go look up the HR Power Hour, check it out, and we appreciate you liking and sharing. Today, we're having more fun than should be allowed talking about pay transparency with Adam Hamill, Director Chair of Employment Practice at McLean Middleton. And by the way, you know, Adam, this is such an important topic because of the times. I appreciate you coming on and talking about it. What are some of the drawbacks now that we've talked about all the benefits? What are some of the, you know, the realistic drawbacks that could be a problem? And I'll start off with one that I know we're going to talk about, which is, okay, hey, Bob makes $1.50 more than me. Adam, I'm pissed.
Absolutely. So this is one thing, you know, that there's this chance of, you know, employee resentment when people know, and this is, you know, probably one of the big reasons why, you know, we always, you know, believe that, you know, the things you don't talk about in, you know, public, in polite conversation is you don't talk about, you know, money, politics, and religion, right? And so there's a reason for that. And one of the reasons is that there's a possibility of, you know, some resentment between, you know, employees. And one of the reasons for that is that there's, you know, sort of this risk that, you know, lower paid employees can become, you know, resentful of the higher paid employees when they know, you know, what, and it doesn't necessarily mean that we're talking about, you know, identifying employee by employee, but sort of knowing what different categories of employees make or what the pay ranges are. And this can be a real problem, especially for higher paid workers whose contributions to the company are sort of more sort of subjective or not, you know, obvious. I mean, you know, if you have someone, you got employees, you know, who are sort of making widgets, and it's easy to know that this person is that productive and someone else is, you know, less productive, or, you know, their contributions to the company are not so visible, that becomes harder and is a potential for some resentment there among employees.
Yeah, especially if, for example, in the sales range where it's maybe a commission-based and it flexes. So 1 month is very high, 1 month is very low, and other employees don't see that, right? They only see that your total is X, and that can be a problem.
Yeah, and of course, you know, and everybody thinks, you know, that they're, you know, that, you know, hey, I work hard and I should get paid in order to see, you know, well, you know, that person, you know, what are they doing that makes it so that they're being paid so much more than me?
Well, that fits into the next one, right? Hey, I'm just overall not happy with what I make. And based upon everything else here, it just doesn't look like it fits in, Adam. And that's a problem.
Absolutely. So, you know, with it, you know, and this is one of the things that we talk about in terms of, you know, when, you know, if an employer does decide to, you know, engage in some increased level of transparency, sort of, you know, how that information gets rolled out and how people react to it. Because when people learn, you know, how they stack up to other employees in terms of pay, there's a real risk that people can be dissatisfied with their compensation. And this is sort of an interesting bit of, you know, human psychology that, you know, people, you know, often overestimate, you know, their value to the company, and they overestimate, you know, their job performance. And you know, I've heard it called, you know, the Lake Wobegon effect. And people may remember the old radio show, the Ferry Home Companion, and talks about this sort of fictional place where, you know, all of the women are strong and all of the men are good looking and all the children are above average. And I think that people sort of feel that about themselves. There was an interesting study of, you know, 700 engineers, and all of them, you know, 40% of them believed that they were in the top 5% of performers. So, you know, I mean, people really do have this sense of sort of, you know, overestimating their value to the organization. So when they sort of see where they fall on the pay scale, they might say, why not higher on the scale based on my perceived, you know, contributions to the company?
Well, I very rarely do people go, I am the lowest level performer here. And I feel that way, right? Now, very rarely does anybody say that.
Absolutely.
You know, you mentioned this again in, I think, the first segment. We talked about privacy concerns and employees that may not want to have their information shared. They may feel it's a violation of privacy. Talk about that a little, especially when it comes to the fact that this could be an employer decision to do so.
Absolutely. And that's really, you know, something where, you know, you got to know your workforce, you've got to know and be careful and thoughtful about, you know, what information you're going to roll out and how. Because again, you know, for a whole bunch of reasons, you know, employees and individuals don't necessarily like to have information about their income and salary, revealed. And then there could be a number of reasons. And one very real reason is, thinking about, the culture and the relationships within your organization, especially if it's a small organization. Think about, those people, sharing lunch in the lunchroom, and people who may be friendly. If all of a sudden the company sort of abruptly says, we're going to, be transparent about our pay ranges or salary. And then, all of a sudden people start looking at each other sideways because they realize that this person who was their friend, is making significantly more or less than them. And it could cause some, discomfort, among people in terms of their relationships with their coworkers.
The other thing, and again, we mentioned it a little bit, but let's expand on it a little bit, is in hiring. Well, if you're publicly putting out what your ranges are, yes, you can always adapt to those ranges, but you may not attract the talent you're looking for. It could be a little bit more of a challenge in terms of getting people that are top tier talent.
Yeah, and this is the flip side of what we were talking about before in terms of the benefit of simplifying the hiring process. In some ways, if you have these sort of rigid pay scales for job categories, if you're being, sort of wholly transparent, and you remove that level of subjectivity or that level of negotiation from the hiring process, it does, hamper the employer's ability to get that real sort of top level employee that they're looking for. That sort of high in demand person that they need. And also if they are dealing with, in a sort of a competitive hiring circumstance, if they have a competitor who, doesn't have that concern and doesn't have that qualm, it's very easy for the employer to be outbid. But maybe part of that analysis for employers then is if they really are finding that the top candidates, are demanding, higher level prices, and that they're missing out on the best candidates because of their inability to go up in their pay. The question becomes then, maybe they need to reevaluate and look at, what it is they think that the market is for that. Or, if the employee is really demanding this high level salary, even though this person might be spectacular, maybe they're not the right person for this job, or maybe this job is not the right job for that person. We need to, this person could be the best thing for our organization, but, we might need to sort of, relook at what it is we're asking this person to do.
Yeah, and that falls into obviously situations where individuals are with an organization a long time, 20, 30 years, and their pay may go above what those ranges are. And certainly there's compensation processes to break ranges and create new tiers to handle those type of situations. Or maybe they just tap out right at the max of a range. But I think those are important parts of the conversation. The last thing that I think we'll ask about is, with all the public scrutiny, there may be this perception that you have to have less disparity between all the different ranges. And there'll be maybe a pressure to really flatten down those ranges.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this one sort of can go hand in hand with the first one we talked about, sort of that employee resentment possibility, is that, if an employer is, being transparent about what the pay ranges are for each of the categories, people both within and maybe with, outside of the company can start asking questions about, why is it that this particular category of employees is making so much more than others? And sort of feel some pressure, whether it's internally or externally, to flatten those pay scales. And that can have some real sort of damaging effects on the employer, depending upon, what the job is. I mean, there was a case of an elite university that was paying its the folks that was managing its endowment, with paying them some, really, high salaries because of the work that they were doing. And when they, when their salaries became known, the organization felt some real pressure to reduce those salaries. They did so to sort of, address that, that concerns that were being raised, and it caused them to lose some of their top performers. So that sort of pressure to flatten the pay scale is something that employers and really feel, and it can cause some real difficulties and challenges for the employer.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's about knowing first and then doing the right thing with it. And I know we're going to talk about some pitfalls afterwards, but we have about a minute and a half left here in this segment. Can you kind of give a quick overview of a quick process that people could go through, that checklist of things that they need to do? And then we're going to talk about the pitfalls of what to make sure you look out for in the last segment.
Yeah, so I think that the very first step is, you know, to do what it was we talked about earlier in the show and to do that analysis of your pay practices before you even think about, you know, engaging in any level of increased pay transparency. You want to sort of do the work to examine, you know, what your pay practices are. I mean, you know, some companies, you know, probably some smaller companies, you know, maybe this is not something that they've even really given a lot of thought to, you know, sort of doing things on an ad hoc basis. And, you know, just kind of organically over the years. So, you know, the first step, I think, is to really take a close look at your pay practices, ensure that they are, you know, compliant with the law and that they're fair and reasonable and something that, you know, you're proud of. So that's step number one. Step number two, I think, would be to identify, you know, what are the goals that you're trying to achieve by implementing some level of pay transparency. You know, what is it that you want to do? Is it something you want to do to enhance your company's culture? Is it something you're looking to do to work on retention? So then those, I think, are the groundwork that you should be doing, is to figure out what it is you want to accomplish.
And that's all great advice. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back. On News Talk, WLOB 100.5 FM.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and today we're talking with Adam Himmel. He is the director and chair of the Employment Practice Group at McLean Middleton. We're talking about pay transparency. And again, you can listen to the show right afterwards at hrpowerhour.com. You can get all information to directly connect with him. This has been a great conversation today, Adam, because we are literally talking about educational HR radio today. We've been talking about pay transparency, and as we wrap up the show, what are the big top pitfalls that somebody has to be really careful of? Because I think this is really critical. Don't just do it because it's a thing. Do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the thing is, that I think that one of the biggest pitfalls that people can run into in terms of pay transparency is to, you know, adopt it or to increase their level of pay transparency for the wrong reason. So I mentioned this in the, you know, before the break, is, you know, identifying why it is that you want to increase your pay transparency. Don't do it because it's trendy, and don't think about it as an end in and of itself. I mean, this is something that is a tool for employers to use. It's something that, you know, can benefit you, and you should want to make sure you understand why it is that you're doing it.
You know, as we look at pay transparency and you look at why an organization should do it, one of the things I would question is, if you have a really small firm, if you're a small family business, and you know, Adam, as well as I do, that small family businesses are the backbone of the country. Is there a level that you would say, hey, we only have 2 employees. We only have 5. Dear God, Adam, I have to worry about this. I have 5 employees. All right, I have 100 employees. Sure, I have 50, but I really have to think about it for 2 or 3 people.
Yeah, and I think that's really the key, and that I think that's one of the other big pitfalls is to adopt, you know, some level of pay transparency that doesn't fit for your organization, and sort of think about, you know, what makes sense for your organization. You know, if you're a small family company, doesn't have a lot of employees, you know, it probably doesn't make sense to even just to go through the effort of developing sort of rigid pay scales for different job categories. What may be helpful for those kinds of employees and the level of transparency that might be appropriate is to be transparent about not so much the money, the dollars and cents, but rather be transparent about what factors you use to determine how you're going to set a salary or what criteria you're going to use when it comes to setting pay increases, and be transparent about that, be transparent about the process rather than being transparent about the dollars and cents. That might make a lot more sense for a smaller employer.
Tell us a little bit about McLean Middleton. Tell us a little about your organization, the practice you have, and I think it'd be great for the audience to know where they can also reach you. As again, they can always go to hrpowerhour.com, but give us a little overview.
Yeah, McLean Middleton is a firm that has been around for over 100 years, and we have just about 100 attorneys in our five offices. We have offices in Manchester, Concord, Portsmouth, the Woburn, Massachusetts office where I'm based, as well as an office in Boston, Massachusetts. We work with companies sort of large and small. We really like those sort of mid-sized companies. We love working with the family companies that we just talked about. In terms of the employment work that we do, we primarily represent employers. We love doing risk management work for employers. If you've got that call, that question, dealing with a challenging termination issue, doing policy and practice review, and then in the case where you are faced with a claim, a lawsuit, we have litigators who are ready to help lawyers address those issues.
That's great. And where can they reach you at?
So, you can find us on our website, McLean.com. I'm at our office in Woburn. And, my email address is adam.hamill@McLean.com.
That's awesome. So, I know we have about a minute left, and I have to ask the most important question of this show, Adam. You used to be a radio guy. So how'd we do?
We did great. You're a true professional. I think that you did a great job. This is awesome. So yeah, when in law school, I was a research assistant for Neil Chayette, who used to do Looking at the Law on WBZ. So that was a lot of fun.
Oh God, yes. And BZ is a big power station up here in the Northeast. They used to broadcast, probably still do, for multiple states, way across. Correct? I mean, they are big stations.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. Well, Adam, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. Appreciate you coming and sharing your expertise on the pay transparency. As I said to everybody, go to hrpowerhour.com right after the show, and you'll be able to connect with Adam directly. Of course, go to any podcast channel, and you can connect and listen to the show as well. We appreciate the audience. We appreciate our sponsors. And Adam, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks a lot, Dave. It's a lot of fun.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour. And we will be right back on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. The tip of the week is coming right up.
And now your HR tip of the week. Your HR tip of the week is being sponsored by Verrill.
Hi, this is Emily Coombs from Verrill. Today I want to talk a bit about affinity groups. Affinity groups, which are sometimes called employee resource groups or ERGs, are groups designed to bring people together of similar interests, backgrounds, groups, and experiences in organizations and businesses. Historically, these groups have been built around legally protected characteristics such as race, gender, or sexual orientation, but the groups can also be premised on interests and experiences unrelated to legally protected traits. Many employers are utilizing affinity groups as part of their initiatives to promote diversity and inclusion, and these groups can be effective to help build their relationships with colleagues and provide a support network in the workplace. This in turn can increase morale, retention, and productivity. It's important to make sure that employees who are and who are not part of affinity groups are treated equally. Issues may arise when members of affinity groups are given special privileges or benefits compared to others. For more conversation on affinity groups, please contact Verrill's Labor and Employment Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Verrill. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.